John Fung used to like to note that when you're born, you enter the lineup to die, and you don't know where you are in the line. It's like when you go into a bank and you pull a number, so you know where you are in line. But in this case, the numbers are handed out randomly. Some people go right to the head of the line and they die right away. In any case, birth is suffering. There's the suffering of being in the womb, suffering of being pushed out of the womb. Many babies die right then. Maybe mothers die at the same time. Of course, there's the pain and suffering for the mother. 9 months of carrying this weight around in their belly. There's that story in the canon of Supavasa. For 7 years she had a pregnancy. When the baby came out, he could talk. So she invites the Buddha and the Sangha to her house. And the baby's in conversation with Sariputta. The Sariputta says, "I hope everything is okay with you." And the baby says, "Well, how could everything be okay? I was 7 years in that cauldron of blood." The mother is overcome with bliss that her son is talking to the general of the Dhamma. The Buddha asks her, "Would you like to have another son like that?" She said, "Oh yes, I'd like to have 7 more." And the Buddha responds with a verse that's pretty brutal. "The disagreeable in the guise of the agreeable, the unlovable in the guise of the lovable, pain in the guise of bliss, overcome one who is heedless." So as you can see, Buddhism doesn't place a lot of emphasis on the glories of birth, how great birth is. As John Shaw would say, most people are happy and laugh when a baby is born. They cry when somebody dies. Maybe they should cry when they're born as well. But still, the fact that we're born means that we can practice the Dharma. We have this human birth. We can do a lot with the human birth. There are people who gain full awakening in a human birth. We have opportunity to learn the Dhamma, practice the Dhamma. And so for that, we should be grateful. This is why the Buddha stresses gratitude for your parents. This doesn't mean the parents were all wonderful back in the time of the Buddha. In many cases, they weren't. In the case of deadbeat dads, parents who abandon their children, one-night stands. The conditions that lead up to birth are not necessarily all that honorable. In many cases, the parents are honorable. They take care of the child. They love the child. As the Buddha said, they give you their blood. In other words, the mother feeds you with her milk. They teach you about the world. They teach you language. They teach you how to function as a human being. It's a long, painstaking process. It takes a lot out of you. Once you have a baby, don't expect to have a solid night's sleep for several years. So the parents sacrifice a lot, in the best cases. But even in the cases that are not the best, as I said, the one-night stands, the deadbeat dads, you still have to have gratitude for your parents. Is it giving you this opportunity to be a human being? You wanted to be the human being. There are people who blame their parents for their birth, but that's not the case. You were the one who wanted to come in there. They opened themselves up to the possibility of having a child, with having no idea who that child would be, where that child came from, what karma they would have with that child in the past. And you were the one who came out. So gratitude is the proper response. Now, this teaching is often misunderstood, both in Asia here and here in the West. In Asia, it's misunderstood as meaning that the child should always obey the parents. And many parents abuse that idea. But it's not an idea that comes from the canon. There are many cases in the canon where people are, with good reason, disobedient to their parents. There's a story of Ratabala, who wants to ordain. He listens to the Dhamma of the Buddha, he's inspired. goes back and tells his parents he wants to ordain, and they said, we'd rather have you die. So he says, okay, I'll go on a hunger strike. Parents plead with the friends to tell Ratibella to stop the strike, but he refuses. The friends finally say, look, he's better off alive as a monk than dead. He's really determined. So the parents give in, unwillingly. And the story for them goes from bad to worse. But for Ratibella, it goes well. He becomes an arahant. So there are cases where people are disobedient from their parents, and it's good. There are also cases where people obey their parents, and it's bad. Suddhina is the prime example. He's the monk who's the star of the origin story for the first Brajika rule against having sex. Similar case with Ratibala. He wants to ordain. His parents don't want him to go. He goes on a hunger strike. They finally give in. He doesn't become an arahant, though, but he is a good monk. There's a famine, he thinks, so maybe I can go back home, get some food for my family. They're well off. They're not suffering from the famine. We can share it among the monks. He goes back, and the mother pleads with him. Okay, even if you don't want to disrobe, please have sex with one of your former wives so we can at least have an heir. So he does, three times, and immediately regrets what he's done. He gets a very severe dressing down from the Buddha. So that's a case where obeying your parents is the wrong thing. So the idea that gratitude for your parents means that you have to obey them has no basis in the canon, no basis in the Buddhist teachings. What you are expected to do is to look after them. Make sure they don't fall into poverty. Make sure that if they're ill, there's someone to treat their illness. Ideally, the Buddha says you should bring your parents to the Dhamma if you can. And there is that case of Rohini, the woman who's chastised by her father. Why is it that you're constantly feeding the monks? Monks are lazy, good-for-nothings. And so she convinces him that monks actually do the highest work, the best work. He ends up going through the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha for refuge, and then ultimately becomes an arahant himself. So in that case, he was willing to listen to his daughter. Now, it's very difficult often for parents to listen to their children, but it is possible for children to influence their parents to see maybe the Buddha was right, maybe the Buddha's teachings are worth listening to. That's the ideal way of repaying your debt. But the point is, you are born with a debt. And this is the point that people in the West don't understand. They think that as soon as they're born, they're entitled to certain treatment, certain wise counseling, wise upbringing. And whenever they find that they're suffering from unwise choices made by their parents, unwise words or attitudes, they blame their parents for not treating them right. The Buddha's attitude is that you are born with a debt. You've got this body that you took from them. So you have certain duties. Whether they raised you well or didn't raise you well, you still have a debt of gratitude to them, and you want to repay that. While they're alive, you try to bring them to the Dharma if you can. Failing that, you make sure, as I said, they don't fall into poverty, that there's someone to look after them when they're ill and when they grow old. After they die, you make merit for them. In case they go to a bad place after death. There's a case of that Brahmin who asked the Buddha, this merit that we make and dedicate to our relatives, does it actually get to them? And the Buddha says, if they're in a position where they can receive it, yes. He talks about the case of hungry ghosts. In the forest tradition, the Ajahn say that there are others that also can receive the merit that's dedicated to them. The way they receive it, of course, is not that you just take the merit out of your account and put it in their account. They have to know that you've done something and dedicated the merit to them. And they have to approve. Their approval is then their merit. They benefit from that. So we're born with a debt. we have this opportunity to be a human being. And whether our parents were honorable or not honorable in opening that opportunity to us, we still owe a lot to them. We should respond with gratitude, as the saying goes. Gratitude is a sign of a good person. It means that you recognize when people have gone out of their way that it was difficult. They had the choice not to go out of their way, but they chose to do it. And you realize how much you depend on that choice that they made. And you appreciate it. That means that you might be willing to go out of your way for other people. Gratitude, by the way, is different from appreciation. Appreciation means you simply have a sense of how much you benefited from something. Gratitude means you've benefited from something that people have done. You might have appreciation for the weather, appreciation for the opportunity like we have right here, right now, a good location to practice. You can appreciate the things around you. But things don't make choices. It's the people who made the choices, so you should be grateful to the people who arranged for this place. What other way? The word gratitude in Pali, katanyu, means that you know what was done. So when someone made a choice to do something to help you, went out of their way, you should have gratitude for that. The primary instance is, of course, your parents, but this applies to other people as well. You realize that the human race lives on people going out of their way for one another. This is what makes human life a good life to have. People didn't go out of their way for one another. The Buddha would have gained awakening and he would have just disappeared into the Himalayan mountains. He taught for all those many years, 45 years walking around northern India, trying to establish this teaching that we have. Not only teaching the Dhamma, trying to explain it, but also dealing with people who were arguing with him. Here he had found the way to true happiness, and people argued with him. Monks and nuns ordained with him, and then they did all kinds of stupid things that he had. So he had to set a huge body of rules. It wasn't easy, but he saw that it was worth it. Nobody hired him to do it. He did it of his own free will. We should have gratitude for that. Gratitude for the people who passed those teachings along. And we have gratitude for our parents. We want to have them in that lineup of people who benefit from the teachings, if we can. If we can't, we repay our debt in other appropriate ways. But when you understand what's meant by gratitude and what your debt to your parents is, then it's a lot easier to respond in an appropriate way. The appropriate way is to make the best you can out of this human birth. Think of all the suffering that's been involved. And to practice the Dhamma as best as you can. Ideally, you get to the point where you have no more debts to anybody. That's the state of the arahant. And the people who make merit with you benefit a lot as well. And your parents will benefit too. Failing that, still, you practice the Dhamma means that you have a lot to share with your parents, with everyone else. As the Buddha said, it'd be hard to find anybody that you would meet in this lifetime who hasn't been a parent at one time. So the debts go all around. So repay those debts in the best way. Practice the Dhamma. And if through your practice of the Dhamma you inspire others to practice as well, so much the better. But at the very least, dedicate the merit that you've made, the goodness that you've done, to everyone to whom you're indebted. The Dhamma is the best currency for repaying debts.